Sit back and relax. It's time to improve your financial lot in life. Produced at CFIS-FM Studios in Prince George, this is your tune-up. And here's your host, Deb Ross.
Hello and welcome. So the government of British Columbia tabled our annual budget this past week, February the 19th. And there's some interesting details that budget raises, some concerns. We've got a lot of happy people running around seeing that there looks like there's a lot of cash flying around the province these days. So I have invited Shirley Bond, MLA for Prince George Vailmont. She's also the chair of the Select Standing Committee on Public Accounts, and she's the official opposition's co-finance critic. So I've invited Shirley to come, give us some information, answer some questions, and just really give us her take on the budget and what we can expect as British Columbians moving forward. Shirley, thank you so much for your time again today. I know you're busy. Thank you for your time.
Well, I'm really happy to be back with you. I appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation, and I think it's really an important one to be having in our community and region.
So first, can you talk to us about your positions as the chair on the Select Standing Committee on Public Accounts and also as the official opposition's co-finance critic, please?
Sure. Well, I've undergone a significant transition from being a cabinet minister in government to having significant roles to play on the opposition side of the legislature. So my number one priority is always being the MLA for Prince George Vailmount and serving my constituency. But as co-finance critic, my colleague, Tracy Reddies, and I, our job is to basically respond to issues that the government is looking at from a fiscal perspective. We debate legislation that's brought into the House. Obviously, the budget is the biggest chunk of our work, and as you can imagine, it's been a very hectic week since the budget was tabled. And as chair of public accounts, it is the one committee chaired by an opposition member. Our job is to review and analyze. It's a multi-party committee, and our job is to review and analyze reports that are provided by the Auditor General, our British Columbia auditor. So very important work, and it's had a fairly significant workload with the current Auditor General that we have in place. So, you know, it's a busy workload, but one that I'm very, very privileged to be part of.
Well, then I'll pass along an extra thank you to you for taking time out of your already busy schedule, but particularly this week busy schedule, and spend some time with us. So can you talk to us about your perspective on what stands out in this budget?
Well, I think a number of things, and I think that I've always believed that budgets, whichever government tables them, there are things that have merit that are included in them. And I think our job, certainly as opposition, is to analyze, you know, how are we going to pay for this? Who's going to pay for it? Is it sustainable? How are things going to be managed? So, you know, one of the key themes in this budget was that there is certainly going to be increased spending, and much of that spending will be subsidized out of taxpayers' pockets. And as you can imagine, you know, when in government, we believe firmly in looking at how we reduce taxes, how we leave more money in taxpayers' pockets. So there is certainly an increase in spending, and there will be an increase in debt that is fairly significant.
Yes, those numbers are very significant. So let's first of all cover the hot topics. So we've got cash for families, cash for students, or at least some financial policies for students, cash for healthcare, and cash for infrastructure. Those are the four areas that really stand out to me. Can you give us some details on those four areas, please?
Sure. The BC Opportunity Fund is an important program that the government is considering. It's a tax benefit that would provide funds to parents. And there is a sliding scale. And so, you know, parents will need to figure out where they fit based on what they're earning. It is for children up until the age of 18. So that's a very significant expansion of the benefit. I think one of the things that concerns us about this, that again, it's a very significant promise, and in fact, it isn't even in place until 2020, and we need to make sure that the NDP are actually going to be able to pay for this. So it is, you know, it is geared mostly to lower tax brackets, And we have to see what the impact will be for middle-class families. But again, a big promise. We've seen some other big promises on child care and renters grants. Those have yet not been fulfilled by this government. So this is certainly their signature promise. But again, we'll see nothing for at least 18 months. And then I question whether or not the budget is sustainable enough to be able to pay for it.
What about financing for students? What are the details behind that?
Well, this eliminates student interest on student loans. It will cost about $318 million. $225 million of that is being written off, and it'll cost about $31 million annually going forward. So, you know, it's certainly something that students will find beneficial, and we've looked at a number of ways to make sure that advanced education opportunities are affordable. This government has made the choice to eliminate student loans, but again, a fairly significant price tag, and somehow that lost revenue will need to be made up in a variety of other ways, including potentially the 19 newer increased taxes that this government has put in place since they became government.
Now, I'm curious about the Liberal platform previously on the student loan program. Was this kind of in their wheelhouse in terms of the interest elimination?
Well, we looked at, first of all, we capped increases to tuition and a variety of other things. But, you know, we were looking at, whenever we looked at how we would make a change, we looked at how we would be able to pay for that before making a significant decision. MSP premiums is a perfect example of that. We said that we would reduce MSP premiums, for example, by half. And because we could afford that within the budget without looking at extra how we generated revenue to actually close that gap. So this government is making decisions, including the elimination of student interest on student loans. And again, students will love that idea, and probably their parents will too. My question is, how are they going to pay for that? Ours was always a progressive look at, let's do it when we can afford to pay for it without additional burden on taxpayers.
So that leads me right into my number three hot topic, which would be the financial position for healthcare and the new money that's available for healthcare. Can you comment on that, please?
Well, certainly the largest spender in government is the healthcare ministry. And you hear from governments right across the country and that, you know, the consumption of healthcare dollars pretty much has the ability to overtake most budgets over time if we're not careful about how we manage that budget. So, you know, there are some important additions here. There will be more money to the BC Cancer Agency, more money provided to expand fair pharmacare. And obviously, that's an important issue for many British Columbians who require additional support through medication. There will be additional money to train graduate more healthcare providers, and obviously, health authorities receive an increase in funding, and I think that's just under $1 billion when you look at 3 years. So again, the question is that enough? It is the largest and budget in government, and again, you have to manage it very carefully because other ministries often have to give up their funding in order to make sure that the health budget is sustainable.
So right on cue, we had an ambulance go by the station here. So I'm not sure if you could hear that, but cash for healthcare. We've got ambulance and sirens going by. The next hot point is money for infrastructure. Talk to us about this one. And this one is a big one.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is, the NDP is promising to spend $20 billion. And again, we need to make sure that that spending is being shared across British Columbia. If I have a concern about this, it's what's in the budget and what isn't in the budget. For example, we have enormous pressures on our own University Hospital of Northern British Columbia. It is not reflected anywhere in these dollars. And as we continue to analyze the budget, we're going to be looking at where exactly those infrastructure dollars are going to be spent. How are those projects going to be built? For example, this government put in place, they called it the Community Benefits Agreement, but for example, on large projects, The NDP has chosen the union that you need to belong to in order to build those projects. So, you know, there's a fairly contentious debate going on in British Columbia about who gets to build those large infrastructure projects. So, you know, every government looks at how they invest in infrastructure. It's necessary. It's important. The concerns that I have, certainly as a Northern MLA, is are we getting our fair share? Where are those investments going to go? And again, can the taxpayer afford that magnitude of investment?
One of the things I'm not sure if a lot of individuals are aware of is that our hospital is not just a local hospital, it is a regional hospital. Now, I lived down in the Fraser Valley for a number of years, and even driving down the highway, you would go through various health authorities, and there are many hospitals quite substantially larger than our regional hospital within 25 miles of one another, right down the valley into Vancouver, and then multiple hospitals in Vancouver. We definitely need a focus on the healthcare resources that we have in Northern BC.
We certainly do. And, you know, it's been something that over time, certainly when we were government, we heard loud and clear from physicians and from, you know, nurses. When I think about the workload that nurses are facing in our hospital, for example, and some of the working conditions they face, it's a stressful enough job, you know, for our healthcare professionals, that if you need additional space and equipment and all of those things, it makes the job that much more difficult. So not only do we need infrastructure from to support the regional nature of the work that's done there, you know, a concern for me that is probably as significant is the training of healthcare professionals. You know, we learned, and I certainly learned firsthand, that if you train people closer to home, they're likely to stay there. We need to see an ongoing program that supports the training and retention of healthcare professionals. You know, I think of physiotherapists, occupational therapists, speech therapists, all of those specialists. It's very hard to recruit them and retain them in Northern British Columbia. We've seen some success, but there is a lot of work to do. And that is, from my perspective, that has to be a critical part of anything that if we want to see improvements in our healthcare outcomes in Northern BC.
I couldn't agree with that statement anymore. I've heard some comments from folks saying that, it's the weather. And I say, no, it's not the weather. You've got people in a very influential age bracket who are doing their post-secondary training. At that time in their life, they're building roots. They're putting roots down. They're kind of finding their adult identities. And at the same time, they're doing their training. So wherever they're going to do their training, that is going to become the soil where their roots are going to go deep, even if they have family in other areas and even if they come from the north. So I think it is a very good idea to invest in future educational pursuits for more of those healthcare focuses in our area.
It absolutely is. And in fact, there have been many studies done about the fact that if you train people, give them those training opportunities closer to home, they are far more likely to stay there. And, you know, what I have spent, you know, most of my time as an MLA working to try to let people in Victoria and beyond our region understand the importance of training closer to home. And we've made such significant advancements. You know, we now train doctors and in the north. We've added nursing spaces. We've added all kinds of other professions. And we continue to need to push that agenda. It's something that we're going to have to continue to remind whatever government's in power that has to be one of the things that we consider if we're going to look at improved outcomes. And, you know, we live in such an incredible place. So together, we need to tell the story about how wonderful it is to live where we live and then provide the training opportunities. And that's the only way I think we're going to solve some of those critical crunch issues.